If you're a smoker or vapor ready to make a change, you really only need one good reason. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you'll discover many good reasons. Reasons like Zyn nicotine pouches are still America's number one choice for smoke-free, hands-free nicotine satisfaction. Or because you can choose between 10 varieties, each available in either 3 or 6 milligrams of nicotine satisfaction. Or even because Zyn offers a robust rewards program full of premium items and experiences. How's that for good reasons? Now, if you're still unsure whether Zyn is the right change for you, there's only one way to find out. Check out Zyn.com/find to find Zyn at a store near you. You have a lot of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
Fastest in practice, sprint pole, sprint victory, Grand Prix pole, and the Grand Prix win! Lando Norris wins the Sao Paulo Grand Prix!
It feels like he's peaking at the perfect time.
It's the most complete version of him that we've seen.
Is it too early to say he's got one hand on that title?
Yes, it is, Tom Clarkson.
What positives can Piastri take from this weekend?
I'm still not sure about the penalty, you know.
From the pit lane to the podium for Max Verstappen.
It might be even better than last year.
This is PlayStation stuff in the Formula One World Championship. Just unbelievable.
Yeah, boy! P2, mate.
Oh, my goodness. That was stressful.
Kimi was just fast. Maybe he's back.
Ollie Bearman in the Haas. Are we looking at a future Ferrari driver?
I think for sure.
Welcome everyone to F1 Nation's review of the Sao Paulo Grand Prix. I'm Tom Clarkson and joining me on the show is F1 TV lead commentator Alex Jakes and Brazilian F1 commentator and former racer Felipe Jafone. Now guys, Interlagos always delivers, doesn't it? What a race. What was the highlight for each of you? Felipe, we'll start with you.
I think Max getting the puncture and start from the pits. I mean, it might be even better than last year, you know, where he won the race, where he had the safety car to help him out a little bit. So I was pretty impressed.
It's hard to look past that. I think it's just the fact that so many races this year we've had a one stop. We've had things decided in the opening laps. Bit of chat about the strategy, then it's disappeared. That was on the line for so many positions all the way to the end. Lando just a little bit out of reach of everyone. I think the fact that so much was uncertain was my overall highlight. And the atmosphere at this racetrack, you bring a Brazilian back on the grid. It's one of the best atmospheres. I've been on the Grand Prix weekend for 10 years now. It's been electric.
Guys, what was extraordinary about this one is Lando Norris was pouring a little bit of cold water on it all after the race. He said that had Max been starting in a decent place on this grid, he would have beaten Lando today.
Yeah, you know, Tom, the first impression that I had from Lando was when he changed tires, I thought maybe he's in a slow rhythm to maybe try to go to the end, you know, with the soft tires. I was a little confused to see if he, okay, it's a done deal, we're going to go for the second start, because I could see a lot of people turning laps like half second, six tenths faster than him. So I think they kind of hesitate a little bit, you know, McLaren. Should we go for two stops or should we actually take it easy on the tires and we might have to go all the way down? So maybe wasn't like the true pace, you know, of Lando Norris, because I think if he really knew that he would be two stops, he could push even more, you know, on the after the first step. That was my impression.
You give a man a 30-second win in Mexico City, and suddenly he wants it every week. But you're absolutely right. He's wary of the threat of what might have been.
I think it's our job to state the facts as well. As this was an emphatic weekend for Lando Norris. He was fastest in every session that counted. He wins the sprint when his teammate and arch rival for the championship crashes. He delivers the win in difficult circumstances on Sunday. I feel that we're seeing a different version of Lando now. Would you agree with that?
100%, Tom. If you see, for me, it starts yesterday, where if we go back to Lando, we know that every time in the past that he had a little bit of pressure on the key three, sometimes he would hesitate and not get the pole. And yesterday, he only had one chance. Otherwise, he would be 10th. And he made the job, you know. So I think he found a way. I don't know if it's because of the delta that they took out of from the dashboard. Maybe he's a little bit less anxious, but I don't know. I think he's learning to deal with this a little better. And I think maybe the last two races, we've seen the best version of him, you know?
Yeah, definitely the most complete version we've seen of Lando Norris in Formula One. He's had the dress rehearsal last year, but as you say, he is passing tests that previously he would have failed. And it's the most complete version of him that we've seen.
He's now got, what is it, nearly one victory in terms of points ahead of Oscar Piastri in the championship now, Oscar being in P2. Is it too early to say he's got one hand on that title?
Yes, it is, Tom Clarkson. Oscar Piastri's led for 15 rounds. After Austin, Max Verstappen was the bookies' favourite. Just take nothing for granted and enjoy the ride with it, because it's the most... I mean, I know if you go racing all the way from March until December, you're going to get a lot packed in, but it feels that we've had three seasons in one. So no, he does not have one hand on the championship trophy.
And with your racing driver mentality, what do you think he's thinking, Felipe, in terms of the championship now?
You mean
Lando?
Lando. I think the way he's taking now is just from what we can listen to him after the race, just like, let's go race by race, you know, and he's doing such a good job right now that I think he's going to try to do one at a time. And the momentum, I think, I even told for the Brazilian TV, even if it would be 5 points or 10 points behind Piastri coming to the São Paulo race, I would still prefer to be Lando, you know, as a driver because of the momentum. So he was in the other way in the beginning of the championship, and I was actually sure that Oscar would do a better job than him. And then he, I don't know if it was the suspension, the front suspension with the last anti-dive. I'm not sure, but it's something click, you know. And even with the loss of the engine, we have to remember that he lost a race that wasn't his fault. So he would be even farther ahead, you know. So I think he's kind of building his championship. And to be honest, I think, besides Max, I think Lando now deserves, you know, to win the championship. Him and Oscar, if we look, whoever did the best job for me, I think Lando is doing a better job if you put all together at this point, you know.
Yeah, it's a really good point. This was Lando's seventh win of the season, wasn't it? He's now equal with Piastri, but it feels like he's peaking at the perfect time.
Yeah, that's massive in championship building, isn't it? And you just feel that ever since he got the front end changed for Canada, the only reason he crashed into Oscar is that he caught him at the end of that Grand Prix. You just feel that more often than not, not just the races, not just the sprints, not just the qualifying sessions, look at the entire weekend from the green light to begin FP1 to the end of a Grand Prix, he has just looked the faster driver. Oscar's last win was Zandvoort, where he needed a last gasp Q3 effort. Lando had been quicker all the way through that weekend. it is now firmly looking like this car belongs to Lando in a way that it did with Oscar at the start of the year when Piastri stole the start that we all expected Lando Norris to get.
So what is Piastri thinking this Sunday evening in the Sao Paulo paddock? Is he capitulating? Do you think, Felipe, he found some of that old speed this weekend? I thought his pace on the soft tyre in that race was electric. What positives can he take from this weekend?
I'm still not sure about the penalty, you know, that he got it. Because I know there is this... Because if it wouldn't be the penalty, he would finish second, right? He would be second, 5 seconds behind Lando, which is good. And I was getting the transcription from the radio. And one thing that caught the attention is how much the team tell him to take care of the tire, take care of the car, watch out with the wheel spin, watch out with the front tires, be careful not to overcook. So I think he's still in a learning process, you know, where Norris, Lando can do this out of the box, you know, he knows how to do. And I think from where I can listen to you guys every weekend, I think Oscar has to fine-tune, I would say, this tire management, you know.
It's funny, isn't it? Because for the first two seasons of Oscar's Formula One career, tire management was an issue, and it felt at the start of this year that he'd moved on from that. But maybe, Felipe, is he starting to look like a driver who's only in his third season of Formula One versus Lando Norris, who's in his seventh, against Max Verstappen, who's in his 11th? Is that inexperience showing up?
I honestly think my answer to your question was going to be the positive for Oscar Piastri is you're 24 points off the lead of the Formula One World Championship in your third season. And everything just mentioned is part of the development of a driver. He's going up against Max, who's not had the car in the first half of the year. He's been on fire in the second half of the year. And again today, Lando, that is Lando's team. He's done well to get there. In his first year, he wins a sprint race. In his second year, he wins a Grand Prix. We're in the same season that Oscar Piastri took his first Grand Prix pole position. That was back in China at the start of the year. We're taking it all for granted. He's had to learn at warp speed. Obviously, since we've left the European races, the questions from year two have come back. And he wasn't on the podium in these races a year ago. And it's felt like we've reverted to that form. But he's less than a win away. And I think if you'd offered him that at the end of last year, he would have bitten your hand off for it.
I agree completely. I think he's still... What he's done in the previous formula, and that was also something that I want to bring it to Gabriel Bortoleto, because, of course, we're Brazilian, that winning, if you look at the guys that won the F2, F3 in the first season, F2 the first season, and then you look at Leclerc and then Russell and then Oscar, of course, then Gabriel, which a little bit different. He didn't win as much races, but these guys for me has something special. You know, I think they understand quite quickly, you know, the cars to win right out of the box, you know. So I think Oscar is one of them. Yeah? But in Formula One, I think it's so complex nowadays with the tire management, you know. I think they know so much about the tire temperature that it's hard.
It is complex, but there are two moments I want to talk about to you in particular, Felipe. His crash in the sprint, and then also what happened on lap 6 when the race went green after the safety car today.
Well, the crash, to be honest, I think was a little bit more of the track fault than him's, because there was a little puddles of water. Like, maybe the only mistake that he did, all of them walk in the track on Thursday. I did. And I could see the standing water on the curbs out of turn 2 and out of turn 4, you know. So that's some place that you don't want to go. I think they correct the problem for today, but you could see the standing water there. So just he went wide, took the water with him. And then he spun. So it was a little unlucky. I don't think was the pressure. I don't think was something with this, you know?
Down to turn number one. Charles Leclerc's got to run. Oscar Piastri's got to run. 3 wide into turn number one. How brave is Piastri feeling? He hits Antonelli, who hits Charles Leclerc, and Piastri will be up to second position, but that's a dramatic moment and there's no tyre on the Ferrari for Charles Leclerc.
He was aggressive, but that's the point, Tom. They have the rule now that it has to be the mirror. Maybe if he would be maybe 10 or 20 centimeters to the front, maybe there was no penalty. So I think it's kind of complicated, you know, because in my point of view, there was a gap there. He went for it. Kimi knew he was there. And at the point that they actually touched it, he was trying to back off. But it was too late, you know, it was too late. Because but then I think Kimi could give him a little bit of room, you know, as well. So I'm not sure. I think
you're siding with a racing accident. I can feel that. Jakesy, what did you make of the restart on lap six?
I think he's got to go for it. It is the nature of the restart. I can't remember many drivers going as late as Lando went. I thought Lando went that late yesterday in the sprint because of the conditions. I was very surprised he went late again. Antonelli, I thought, having seen an example of when Lando had gone before, I thought he'd stay with him. His slightly slow reaction has caused that three wide moment because they're able to react immediately. I think Piastri has to go for that. I think we're sitting here going, there was a restart, there was an opportunity. He played it safe. Why did he play it safe? I think he has to go for that if he's going to win the World Championship. The rule exists, as you really well described, that you've got to be further alongside, and he wasn't. Is it a really frustrating rule? Yes. But in modern Formula One, with a sample size of the last 5 years, that was always going to be given with a penalty. I can tell you, my phone is littered with messages with drivers that I've worked with in the commentary box going, that is not a penalty. And I always defer to my co-commentator.
But isn't the point he locked up? I think without the lockup, Jake C,
yeah,
I don't think he would have got the penalty.
I agree, but the first thing James Hinchcliffe said to me is, a lockup is not out of control. And that's what every driver has been repeating. And I just think the nuances of these rules, I haven't found a racing driver who agrees with that penalty yet.
This episode is sponsored by Indeed. If I had to build a team for this podcast, I'd want people who are fast, focused, and already know how to get the job done. And if I were hiring for a business, I'd take the same approach. You don't just need someone to fill a seat, you need someone who actually fits. And more often than not, you need to find them quickly. And that's why I'd turn to Indeed Sponsored Jobs. Sponsored Jobs boosts your listing so it's seen by candidates with the right skills and experience first, helping you find people who can make an impact from day one. And it works. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed are 95% more likely to report a hire than non-sponsored jobs. There's no monthly subscription or long-term contract, just a smarter way to connect with the right talent. And right now, there's a talented person out there who could take your company to the next level, and Indeed can help you find them. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/nation. Just go to Indeed.com/nation right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/nation. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, do it the right way with Indeed.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.
Max Verstappen climbed 16 places from the pit lane to the podium. Fantasy Formula One for the four-time world champion.
Pit lane to P3, very nearly P2. Jake C, you were here last year on the pod discussing P17 to the win. Do you think what he did today, pit lane to P3, was even more impressive?
Yeah, it's dry, and in the context of the rest of his weekend, he didn't expect that, did he? Just absolutely incredible pace. I was watching his lap times towards the end, and I was thinking, if you don't drop off a cliff soon, you're going to be in the mix to win this race. And I was like, this is ludicrous. This is PlayStation stuff in the Formula One World Championship. It's just unbelievable that it was even possible. And then the fact that he's only 0.2 of a second away at the end across the line, I was mighty impressed. The win always trumps it. And remember, that was the significance of he needed one win to basically stop the momentum and effectively take the title there and then. So that is more significant in the course of his career. But it's the happiest I've ever seen him with a P3.
Imagine that the driver was talking to Gabriel after the Friday, and he was saying how hard it is to control the tire temperature. He said even with the soft tires, if you go for one hot lap, in the middle of the lap, you start losing grip because of your overheating the tire. So imagine Max doing this for such a long time, you know, knowing exactly how much he has to push. You know, even the team was in the radio, okay, just watch out, yeah, be careful with the tires. And he's like, no, we got to go for it, you know.
I thought Red Bull pulled a blinder today strategically, but there was one question mark I have on it, which is he pitted for those soft tires on lap 54, right? There's still quite a lot of the race to go. Imagine if he'd pitted 5 laps later. They would have been that much fresher. I think he would have still got onto the back of those Mercedes. Armchair strategist here. Am I being too critical?
I can see why they did it. Track's rubbered in at the best condition that it's been all weekend. Car's low on fuel. You know the setup's working for him. He's been in an unbelievable groove all the way through. You want to give him time to use the tyre. That soft tyre was not a good tyre all the way through the weekend. It was expiring fast. So you could have done that, but then we could easily be asking the question, why didn't you give him 8 laps? So I think either way, the effort to get that close. What I was really impressed with was Kimi Antonelli's defence standing tall, because I think a lot of people would have just assumed that was going to be slam dunk. And that's a big step forward in his development as the F1 driver.
I think yesterday on qualifying was maybe one of the first times where I see, in my point of view, a team mistake, because I think he was the only one that had never used the second set of softs to go for Q1. Of course, he never has to, because it's so easy for them. But even the McLarens, even the strong guys, they did for 2 new sets. And he went for 1 fast lap and then cool down for 2 laps and try another one. In a track that everybody knows that is kind of hard to get the second lap out of. So maybe it was a mistake there. And my question was how far up he could actually be, you know, in qualifying mode. If he would just be there, maybe 4th, 3rd, 5th, I don't know, somewhere around there. But maybe he wouldn't have the car that he just had it today, because he went to Parc Fermé. He put up, I said, okay, if he started 4th, maybe he would not even finish 2nd.
But Felipe, wasn't the car so far out of the window in qualifying that even if he had done that second set of soft tyres and got through to Q2, do you really think he would have got into Q3?
I think so, Tom. I think I have the impression, because if you look at on the sprint race, he wasn't that far off. He was far in the sector 2 on the new tires. It was like half second, 6, 7 tenths. But it caught me attention on the sprints that he wasn't that bad, you know?
I think they changed the setup a bit between the sprint and quali, didn't they? And they went in the wrong direction. Yeah. And so I think for the armchair fan, I think you're absolutely right. Thank goodness he got knocked out in Q1.
Yeah, yeah.
He went, started from the pit lane. I mean, they changed everything on that car. The floor, the suspension, even the new power unit, which has got to be worth a few horsepower, isn't it? Old versus new. And that's what gave us such an electric race, or one of the reasons today, anyway.
For sure, yeah. No, I think that was the right decision. And that's what I said. Maybe if he just start the race in 4th or 5th, he would finish this on the same place, you know, and for us it would be a much worse race to watch. You know? John,
I asked Max at the end of the press conference how he rated his chances in this World Championship. Now he's 49 points behind Lando Norris. I said, look, do you think, given your pace today, the car will be quick at all of the last three events? And he said, I have no idea. Just look at us this weekend. Look at us in Mexico. Maybe, maybe not. What do you think, Jake C?
I think they will be quick in Vegas.
Why?
Because I think they've shown form in the past and they've got on top of the ride when it comes to a bumpy circuit. It's a very, very bumpy circuit. That car has worked when it comes to low temperatures. We expect low temperatures with the time that we run there. We know he's rapid in Qatar. And then final race of the year, he's always been great at Abu Dhabi. So yeah, I think he's in the mix for the final three.
And it's Kimi Antonelli who hangs on by 0.3 seconds. Antonelli with his best ever result in Formula One.
Oh my goodness, that was stressful.
You both touched on Kimi Antonelli. What a great defence he put in today in the race. Secures his second podium in Formula One, his best finish in Formula One.
Actually, it was two good races, right? Because one on Saturday and the other one today. And I think he really needed, after the race that he had in Miami, after the pole, couldn't really put all together on race day. You could actually see that Kimi was just fast, you know. He was just faster throughout one lap, faster throughout the race as well. So I think for him, maybe it was a huge gain of confidence, you know. Maybe can turn the key a little bit, where he starts the season good, and then he had a big part of the season where he's kind of, okay, maybe it was too soon. Maybe he's back.
Ever since Toto Wolff accused him of being underwhelming at his home Grand Prix at Monza, he's kicked on from there, isn't he?
I think he came before. I think he made a setup breakthrough in Budapest. And he had a very, very anonymous race in Budapest. But I think he came out of that Grand Prix understanding the car a lot more. The question I always have with Kimi Antonelli, he's turned up to Miami, a circuit he doesn't know. He's put it in the sprint format with 1 hour of practice on sprint pole. He turns up to Interlagos, another circuit he doesn't know. He's put it on the front row for the sprint. And all the European leg that he knows off by heart and has raced that time and time again. So that I find slightly quirky, but very, very impressed that he's been able to do it here.
I think it shows huge talent to be able to go to a new racetrack and deliver immediately.
Yeah, I think nowadays with the simulators that they have it, and maybe the less pressure as well, maybe because it's a new circuit, you just go and see what we can do. And you see when he was in Italy that he has everybody together and it was a messy weekend. Maybe it's just the pressure. Maybe he kind of feel a little bit with less on his shoulders and deliver more.
I mean, kudos to the Mercedes team. They saw this in him all along, didn't they? And I think Toto Wolff never doubted him, even in the low moments.
No, I think that was definitely motivation. If you've hurried him through the junior categories like Toto Wolff did, and I was a little bit fearful because no one doubts his talent. I was thinking the only way you can mess this kid up is by putting him in before he's ready. And then they put him in. And in the middle part of the year, I was like, no, because he's so good. And we know he's so good. So they never doubted it. But also credit to Pete Bonington as well. It's quite a contrast to go from a 7-time world champion. When you heard his information, just so calm. Kimi far from calm at the end. But he's a 19-year-old teenager racing Max Verstappen. But I think that's a perfect person to tutor you through a rookie campaign.
He seems to go well on low grip circuits as well. I mean, Miami is a low grip circuit. Mexico low grip circuit, here is a low grip circuit. What does that tell you about a driver's feel, Felipe?
It's hard to say, Tom, because usually drivers, they like more grip, right? It's almost like when you have more grip, it's kind of easier, you know, as you step series by series. You see, sometimes when you go backwards, like Oscar had the issue with the low grip track, maybe because you try to overdo and you start to bring the temperatures up, you know, and maybe try to mess the tires a little bit. But for Kimi, it's working fine, right?
Well, let's talk about another rookie as well, because if Kimi is hitting form now, there's another young guy who has just had his fourth consecutive points finish. Olli Behrmann in the Haas. I mean, lots of great races this year, but Mexico in here is something else.
Yeah, he has been superlative and back to the faith that Haas showed, because he had an incredibly ordinary second year in Formula 2. Finished outside the top 10 of that championship. Very few drivers miss like that in a second season and get the promotion. Haas were convinced by those FP1s, and the updates they've brought have brought him alive, haven't they? Esteban is doing okay, a proven Grand Prix winner. Olli has been brought alive by this and showing all the reason why Ferrari was so interested in him for so long.
You mentioned Ferrari. If he continues in this trajectory, are we looking at a future Ferrari driver, Alex?
I think for sure. Honestly, I think what he's done in the last few races, he's showing week in, week out, different types of circuit. Was disappointed to be P8 on the grid yesterday because he believed the top five was there. How quickly the expectations change, but Haas believe he's capable of it, and so does he.
Kudos to Olli Behrmann. Let's talk about two other rookies as well. Liam Lawson, Isaac Hadjar. Lawson doing 52 laps on the medium tyre. We've never seen that from him before. Talk about drivers hitting their stride late in the season. Antonelli is one. I feel Isaac Hadjar has been impressive all year. Lawson is getting better. He feels like he's getting more and more comfortable in that racing ball.
That's not his best result overall, but that's by far his best drive in Formula 1. To have a queue all the way down to P12 and a DRS train at the end, it looked like a safety car restart across the line. To keep your head and deliver that, it's one thing to, oh, didn't he have a good drive? Oh, unfortunately, it melted at the end. You have to deliver that when you're in a fight for your Formula One career, which he absolutely is. That's a massive result in that context.
He had nine cars just after him, you know. If you see the difference, it's like 5 seconds.
And it is possible to overtake here. So he did a cracking job keeping them behind.
Yeah, he with a tire that wasn't good enough, you know, and of course, Tom, the car has to, I mean, even you see Max going through people, but he had a fast car where overtakes, which makes easier. Maybe the Haas car also was a little bit faster in the straight, which helps a little bit. So, but even looking at this, he did an awesome job just to keep all these laps on the tires and still finish well, right?
Now, Felipe, can we talk about the local boy now? The local hero, Gabriel Bortoleto. Watching Gabby this weekend, very confident on Thursday in the media day, in the press conference. But so much of his weekend has reminded me of so many Brazilian drivers. I think of Rubens coming here year after year, so much expectation and just so many frustrations for him. We haven't had a full-time Brazilian driver on the grid since Massa. Just how much pressure was there on Gabby coming here, do you think? Just from the Brazilian fans, the Brazilian media, Brazilian TV even.
Yeah. I think he just realized how big he actually was when he got here, you know, because a year ago he had no idea. So I think it must touch a little bit, right? Anybody, I mean, mainly the Brazilians or the Italians, that it gets a little bit more excited. And but again, I think on the first practice, he did a really good job. You know, he was really focused. And for me, he tried to kind of dive bomb. You know, he was too flat out moving the car. The track was a little damp. The DRS was open because he was too flat. And then he lost a little pressure in the back because the DRS was open. And for me, it wasn't necessary. It was kind of a rookie mistake. I was listening to the radio as well. I think the team was kind of giving him a push, you know, let's go, you can do it. He just made the same move, but basically the same move the lap before, but he got passed on the back stretch. But that was actually for nothing, right? There was no point involved. There was nothing. So, and again, here I saw his first lap going the outside of the Laranjinha, and then the first lap was until he crashed. Was amazing, but maybe he was just a little too excited for the first Brazilian Grand Prix. And going back, Tom, most of, like 80% of the Brazilians, they had a bad weekend in the first weekend, Formula One weekend. Maybe it's the pressure, you know?
The crash in the sprint. Now, It was 57 G, yeah. That impact. I don't know how many racing cars you crashed in your career, yeah. Felipe, but how difficult is it to bounce back when you've just had a really big hit like that?
I had a few. I broke my femur and pelvis in the IndyCar already. But the impression that I had was a huge hit. But I think on his head, the headrest made a huge job there. You could see on the slow motion that the headrest flexing quite a lot. So I didn't think that he got a big hit in his head, which he was not even sore today, you know. So I think the car was very well, even though it was a 57 Gs. I didn't think his body was a little bit. I think he was a little scared of the crash, but on his body it doesn't seem that it was too aggressive, you know, which was very good for him. And in my point of view, when you crash in a situation where he crashed, that he didn't lose the car in a way that he didn't know exactly what happened. I think it's easier for the driver, you know. I think it's hard for the driver when you lose the car, lose the rear kind of fast, and then you have a big hit, you know. There he was trying to overtake, the track was a little dumb, the DRS was open. So I think for him to be back on track and do a good job, I think it's not an issue at all.
And what do you make of his rookie season as a whole?
I'm impressed, to be honest. I know Gabriel since he was a little kid doing go-karts, and I think he really showed up. He was a really go-karter. Before F3, he didn't do really well, and all of a sudden he started doing really well. And I was very impressed with the way he's taking with the team, you know, the way he talks to people. I see Gabriel a long-term F1 driver, you know, the way, not the way he, only the way he drives, but the way he deal with people, you know. I mean, people like him, I don't know if he's going to be a very good second driver or if he's going to be maybe a world champion. I cannot say that, but I think he's going to be here for a long time because you can see that people like the way he's a team player, you know. I think it's very good for him.
Jake C, do you think he's a future world champion?
Hard to say at this stage, but I don't think there are many people who would have had him ahead of Hülkenberg in the qualifying head-to-head. The thing I'm most pleased about for him is the fact that he has had a car to show the talent. My worry for him is that Sauber, a year ahead of Audi, we're just going to be looking to 2026, and he's going to be on the back row every single week. And what he did in Budapest this year was fantastic.
This episode is sponsored by Trade, the number one coffee destination in the US. You've probably heard me mention Trade on the show before, and that's because I really rate their coffee. And since it's that time of year when you want to treat yourself or someone else to something a little bit special, Trade makes it super easy to discover something new. Whether you're after something bold and chocolatey or light and fruity, they'll match you to it. And that's because they partner with over 50 of the country's best independent roasters. And you won't find these coffees in your average supermarket. Every bag is roasted to order, delivered fresh and tailored to your taste through their quick quiz. And if your first bag isn't quite right, they'll replace it for free until they get it just right. And it's not just about variety, though there are over 450 coffees to choose from. It's the fact that every recommendation is personalized. I'm a huge fan of the espresso roast from Alma Coffee, a small batch farm-to-cup roaster from Georgia. It's chocolatey, nutty, everything I love. In fact, I might just share the joy and gift a bag to a friend. And you can too, because right now, Trade is offering 50% off a one-month trial at drinktrade.com/nation and 10% off gifts. That's drinktrade.com/nation to get 50% off 1 month and 10% off gifts. drinktrade.com/nation.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
There's more to come from Brazil in a moment, but I wanted to let you know about the other official F1 podcast you can listen to this week. Oscar Piastri is my guest on F1 Beyond the Grid. That's out on Wednesday, and you can watch our chat on the F1 YouTube channel. And this week's F1 Explains is a quickfire question special with F1 TV's Laura Winter and James Hinchcliffe. That's out on Friday. Just search for F1 Beyond the Grid and F1 Explains on your podcast app. So Ferrari, their third pointless race of the year. Charles Leclerc starting from third on the grid, but it just unraveled. But by lap six of this Grand Prix, it was effectively all over. Jakes, just sum up the difficulties that Ferrari had this weekend.
Well, where do you begin? On Friday, it looked horrible to drive on the infield.
But as it did in Mexico, do you remember? They seemed to start off the pace and they managed to salvage it there, but
you cannot be starting there when you're up against Mercedes, Red Bull and McLaren. So you're on the back foot. I was very impressed with Charles Leclerc's lap to manage to get it third on the grid for the Grand Prix. But it still did not look good on the onboard. You've got them in the sprint race, a little bit of lift and coast as well. They've got a fundamental issue with that car. Charles Leclerc has no choice, like Oscar, to go for that move. Gets caught up in that. And Lewis Hamilton was so despondent to go out in Q2 that he knew that he needed it to rain. As soon as it didn't rain, there's a small misjudgment at the start, and that's the end of it. It's a tough one, isn't it? And it's not what... If you think about where their expectations were at the start of the year compared to what we've got in this campaign, it sums it up. It's been a tough one.
Well, and they've slipped from P2 in the Constructors' Championship. They're now back behind Red Bull in P4. I mean,
and Red Bull, Max is doing like 90-95% of the points.
Max has scored 341 of Red Bull's 366 points this year.
Yeah, and what caught me the attention for me from Ferrari this weekend was on Friday. I think they're trying to save tires, so they never went to the medium tires. It's so hard, right? The impressions that I had every time on Q3, everybody that went to the soft tires, the car was a little bit too loose. And I think you had more grip in the front, the impression in most of the cars. And I think the first mistake was that one, because you never actually use the tires that you're going to use on the qualifying, you know, coming up. So I think the other teams had more time to prepare. Okay, we used the medium. You had a few hours there to kind of fine-tune the car for it, and they never did. So they start with the back foot, and then the race, we know what happened there today.
It's just difficult times, isn't it? The end of the season can't come soon enough for them, and my goodness, they need to make a leap next year, don't they? Otherwise, I can just envisage more changes at Ferrari, more sort of unsettling management changes. I feel it could all happen again if they don't make that leap to challenge, at least challenging for the World Championship next year.
I completely agree. And we'll know, the moment we'll know is when we're in Bahrain and you're asking them questions in the testing press conference, because that's the moment where you see the body language, you see the reality. It doesn't matter what the lap time says. If Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton are not happy in the Bahrain test, the second one that we have next year, then yeah, I think we're going to get more of the same.
And team principal Fred Vasseur said at the summer break that finishing P2 in the championship and winning a race this year were important to that team. And they couldn't look further away from both of those things as we sit here now with three to go.
Ultimately, Vegas represents their last real opportunity of the season. They've always gone well there. That car is well suited. mechanically, short corners, low grip, high speed, they've still got a chance. They've been competitive every time we've gone there.
Well, guys, it is now that moment in the show when we talk about driver of the day. So Max won the vote on TV. Jakesy, let's start with you. Who is your driver of the day? You can even give us two if you want.
I'm going to go for two because it's obvious that Max Verstappen coming from the pit lane to the podium, which is, I think it's happened eight times in Formula One history. Come on, that is silly stuff. I called it fantasy Formula One on air, and that's what it felt like. But very, very impressed with Antonelli. I felt racecraft-wise, belonging at the front-wise, that was his most complete F1 weekend.
I would have to be exactly the same.
Now, that doesn't make for good listening if we all say... Yes,
yeah. That's all you get. Good night.
I'm sorry.
So you'll say what? Max is your driver.
Yeah, Max is the first one for sure. Because Kimi, I mean, we have to see that... We've been talking a lot that Russell was one of the best drivers of the year. And now he just beat him, you know, like from one lap in the race. It's not that George had a problem. I mean, he was faster. So that's why I think he deserved.
I maintain that George Russell is still my second best driver of the year after Max Verstappen. Still now with three to go.
Yes. And I agree. That's why I think Kimi today was very impressed.
Okay, well, look, give us a third name.
Behrmann, maybe. I think it's with the Haas. Future Ferrari driver, maybe.
I'm going to go for the guy who won the race and posted a perfect weekend, topping every session, who was the fourth name that we mentioned in Driver of the Day. That's when you know you've seen some good performances out there.
I'm going to throw just one more name in there, and that is Pierre Gasly. Alpine have had a really, really rough time of recent, and he scored points in the sprint, and then of course he brings it home 10th in the Grand Prix itself, and it was wonderful to see that team. I'm not going to say back where they should be, but that the fickle nature of Formula One in 2025 is kind of what it proves, and that car is so off the pace some weekends, and yet he said that from his first lap in FP1 on Friday, he knew he had a car underneath him that he could do something with.
The team didn't know why, but he loves this place, doesn't he? He adores this place. Twice on the podium here. There's just something about Gasly in this racetrack that's magic.
Well, look, guys, thank you both very much for your time. Felipe, wonderful to have you on the show.
Thank you very much for your time.
Obrigado. Jakesy, great to have you on the show again. Are we going to see you in Las Vegas?
Not in Vegas, but there for the final two.
There for the champion, the crowning of the champion. And we're not going to see you, Felipe, are you? You do it from here in Sao Paulo.
From here, yes.
Okay, well, guys, thank you both very much. Travel safe back to Europe, Jakesy. Travel safe, what, a couple of kilometres up the road for you? Still take you 2 hours to get there, Felipe, but anyway. All right, guys, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, what a weekend it's been here at Interlagos. And for more reaction and analysis, please go to F1.com, the official F1 app, or at F1 on social media. And you can also watch the race highlights on the F1 YouTube channel. Las Vegas is up next. Get your tickets at F1LasVegasGP.com and join us next Monday for our preview of that race. Thank you very much for listening. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios.
. 2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.